This podcast is produced by Unedited.
The Songwriters Podcast is in association with the Ivers Academy and PRS for Music M Magazine. My name's Louise Golby. I'm an independent artist and I've been writing and performing my own music for quite a while now. As a songwriter myself, I'm very interested in the art of songwriting, how song ideas come about, what triggers certain lyrics, or how a melody or musical idea is started. In this series, I've interviewed some of the UK's leading songwriters and artists, discussing their songwriting techniques and stories behind their biggest songs and collaborations. My guests have written tracks for the likes of Stevie Wonder, Adele, Tina Turner, Kylie Minogue and Cher, as well as receiving MBEs, Grammys, Ivor Novello's, Brit Awards and number one singles for their work. My guest for this episode is one of Britain's most celebrated lyricists. With a career spanning over six decades, his accolades include an OBE, an Oscar, five Grammy nominations, two Tony Awards, five Ivor Novello Awards, a Golden Globe, global number one hits, and multiple platinum, gold and silver discs for his work. He has written over 100 songs for film, including The Italian Job, The Pink Panther Strikes Again, True Grit, Dances with Wolves, Out of Africa, and five James Bond theme songs. He has written with some of the world's leading composers, including Jules Stein, Henry Mancini, Quincy Jones, John Barry, and Michel Legrand. He has written pop songs for Michael Jackson, Lulu, Olivia Newton-John, Glen Campbell, Tony Bennett, and Robbie Williams, to name a few. He's written lyrics and librettos for many stage and film musicals, including six with Andrew Lloyd Webber, and one of his most recent works, Bonnie and Clyde, is currently showing in the West End. In recognition of his contribution to British music and culture, he was given the PRS for Music Award for Extraordinary Achievement in 1999, and in 2007, he was inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. I am so honoured to have had the opportunity to interview the incredible Don Black OBE about his hugely successful career, the stories behind some of his biggest songs, and discuss his songwriting techniques and processes. I started with the question I've been asking all of my guests. If I was to introduce you with just one song, what would it be?
The guy who wrote the music was a man called Walter Scharf, who, if you look him up, no one knows his name, but he did the scores for all those Elvis Presley films and many other films. And he called me up one day and said, "Do you want to write a song about a rat?" So I said, "Not really, why?" He said, "Well, you wrote one about a lion with Born Free. What's the difference?" So he showed me a clip of the film. It was a film called Ben. And it's about a boy who had leukemia. He was very ill. And but this rat, a friendly rat, came into his bedroom. And he loved this, so they became great friends. It was like, and it helped him get better. So I said to Walter Scharf, "I can't write a song about traps and cheese. Well, I can write a song about friendship." And that's how it started.
Ben is a song written by Don Black and Walter Scharf for the 1972 film of the same name. It was performed by Lee Montgomery in the film and by Michael Jackson over the closing credits. Jackson's single, recorded for the Motown label in 1972, was Jackson's first number one single in the US as a solo artist. The song also later reached number seven on the UK singles chart. Ben won a Golden Globe for Best Song and was nominated for an Oscar for Best Original Song in 1973. When you get given a brief like that for a film, do you find it more restrictive that you're writing for screen as opposed to writing for commercial pop?
Well, you always like to please the director and the producer. So you like to be specific that it fits that movie. You can't be generic. It's got to be about this rat. And you'll find if you analyze that lyric, it's all about, you know, Ben, the two of us need look no more. You know, we both found what we were looking for, etc. But so it could be a best friend. But it fits that film perfectly. So I don't know what you do look, because people always ask me, and as they ask all songwriters, how do you start? How do you do it? And the thing is, there is no way. It's an instinctive thing. When Paul McCartney was asked how he wrote Yesterday, he said it was just a good day at the office. And that really is. When I wrote Ben, it was a good day at the office, because that's what I do. Some days you get a Ben, other days you get nothing.
There's a rumour it was originally written for Donny Osmond. Is that true?
It wasn't. It was a discussion that people said, who could we get? And Donny Osmond's name came up. But then they thought this would be Michael Jackson's first record as a solo singer. And so we went to him. And he loved the song so much. In fact, when I played it to him, or when Walter Scharf played it and I sang it to him, he cried, particularly at the middle bit, which he thought was the best two lines he'd ever heard. You know the lines. I used to say I and me, now it's us, now it's we. And he got very tearful on that. And in his biography, he wrote that that's his favourite two lines of any song.
You were managing Marty Webb at the time when she re-recorded it in 1985. What was it like getting that song out there again, but with a different singer and in a different time?
Yeah, well, it's always great when a song is covered by another artist. That's why we do what we do. It's what we hope for. But that particular version was I was asked by Esther Ranson, because she did this TV show. I think it was called That's Life. And a boy called Ben Hardwick was very, very ill. And she wanted to raise money for this charity, to get money for him. And that was the idea behind Marty doing it. And it sold very well and made a lot of money for this boy and his family. I mean, it's like any song when I hear of mine. You know, it's one of the great thrills, especially if you're in an airport or in a lift and you suddenly hear Diamonds Are Forever in a lift. You think, oh, hang on.
Do you hope that people recognise you when you're in, if there's other people in the lift and you say, that's me?
No, I don't. I don't particularly like that. I love my anonymity. As I got more well known, people do recognise me more, but not in a way that they recognise Andrew Lloyd Webber, who's got a very famous face. I'm famous for people who know about music. Cab drivers know me. I'm very big with cab drivers, especially Jewish ones, because they're very proud of me.
Before we delve into your other big songs, let's start at the beginning. Can you tell us your journey as a lyricist, songwriter? And where was the point where you knew this is your career, this is where you're going?
Well, I've always loved songs, ever since I was 10 or 11, young. And my parents used to listen to the radio, but I listened to these great songs by Irving Berlin and Cole Porter, and they were so beautifully crafted and said such wonderful things in a crafted way, in a different way. I just knew every song that was going from the 50s to 60s. It all changed later on. But even now, I listen to those songs. And I just started to write a few lyrics, and then I was a song plugger in Denmark Street, which is known as Tin Pan Alley. I met a lot of people who wrote songs, and they seemed so happy. And even the very old songwriters, they never seemed to lose their twinkle. They never got old. And, you know, I thought that's a great way to make a living. They kept saying, well, I've got to go over to the park today because I've got a song to write. And you thought, well, what a way to make a living. Anyway, I wrote a bunch of songs that didn't mean anything, as we all do. And then Matt Munro, who was a very good friend of mine and a most wonderful singer, he fell in love with a melody, an Austrian melody called Warum nur warum. It was in the Eurovision Song Contest representing Austria. And he said to me, would you put some words to it? You're always on about lyrics. And so I listened to it. I put some words to it, to cut a long story short. I called it Walk Away. That was my first hit. And it was a time when people were starting rock and roll and stuff like that. And so a ballad shone through. And anyway, the one person who loved it more than anyone else was the composer John Barry, who I knew John Barry from being in this Denmark Street. And he said, I'm doing a film at the moment, he said. Would you fancy having a go at it? He said, it's a thing called Thunderball. It's a James Bond film.
Don Black is the lyricist behind five Bond themes. These are Thunderball, Diamonds Are Forever, The Man with the Golden Gun, The World Is Not Enough, and Surrender from Tomorrow Never Dies.
I wrote that and Tom Jones recorded it. And that opened a lot of doors for me because it was successful. I started getting offers to do other film songs and I just kept writing. I mean, I've written so many songs over the years. But the biggest breakthrough came when I wrote the song Born Free for Matt Monro and John Barry wrote the music and it won an Oscar. Now, when you win an Oscar, you know, even back then, which was 1966 when I won it, I was 27. I didn't know how much an Oscar meant. I knew it was good to have. But my God, my phone never stopped ringing from every composer saying, will you write lyrics for this? Would you write lyrics for that? Elmer Bernstein, who's written Henry Mancini, who wrote Moon River, and all these great people I was writing with. So my life changed very much from that, from Born Free.
Wow. So you must have been absolutely honoured to then get all these calls, be working with these composers that you admired.
Yeah, well, it was a particular good year that year when I was, because the same year I had another unbelievably big hit, which was To Sir With Love.
For Lulu.
Lulu. And she also went to number one in America with it. So I was hot. I was hot in the 60s. John Barry wanted to write musicals. And that took me into musicals, and I wrote my first musical. So I started spreading out. I wrote pop songs, I started film songs. But the greatest move I think I ever made was writing musicals for a couple of reasons. One thing, I enjoyed it very much. And you can write anything, any subject when you're writing about it. You can write about heartbreak, disappointment. Not like writing a pop song where you're looking for a hook. And you're looking for, you know, it's a great, for a lyric writer, it's wonderful. If two people are arguing on a stage, you've got to write witty lyrics, you've got, you know, whatever. And my first musical was Billy that I wrote. Billy starred Michael Crawford. It's based on Billy Liar. And it ran for 3 years. So it was a huge hit. And since then, I must have written, I don't know, 25 musicals. A lot of flops, incidentally. I've written some big ones. But it's a lot of work goes into these things.
Yeah.
So it's been fun.
We will, of course, talk more about the musicals shortly, but I just wanted to quickly touch on something you mentioned earlier about the Austrian song for Matt Monro. What's it like when you rewrite a foreign lyric for an English version? Do you find it challenging trying to stick to the original lyric and translate it as close as possible while making the English phrasing and phonetics work melodically?
Well, no, if there's a good idea in a foreign lyric, then you try and get close to it. But this was just a melody that Matt loved. The song starts off in Austrian, Warum nur warum? And I wrote, walk away, please go before you throw your life away. And it just sang so well to that melody.
We should have met some years ago, for your sake I say, walk away, just go, walk away and live.
And there are no rules with any of this. You know, that's why it's very hard to interview songwriters, because they don't know how they do it. They don't. I mean, I know you write songs, so it's the same principle. You write a song, and when you've finished it and you like it, and someone says, how did you do it? Just sat down and did it. And that's what I do. I'm sitting in my kitchen now, and if I'm asked to write a song today, I'll just sit in my kitchen and do it. That because it's what you do. There isn't an anecdote with every song.
Of course. But do you find your songwriting process changes with different things? So are you always given a melody, or do you often have lyrics that you sit down and write and then hope that you'll get the chance to use
it? I do it both ways. I write. If I'm asked to write the lyric first, I will. But I much prefer having the melody first. There's a reason for this, because if you write the lyric first, there's a tendency to ramble. In Sunset Boulevard, there is a big song for Norma Desmond to sing. Andrew Lloyd Webber gave me the tune, and the tune went, la, la, la. That's how it started. So I wrote, with one look, you can break my, I can break your heart. Now, if I would have written it first, the lyric, I could have written anything, you know, every time you look at me. You know, it could have been anything. It could have been longer. But that compression, that framework is better for you. La, la, la. Well, it's got to be tight, whatever it is. You can't hang about. So melodies do that. And melodies also dictate how you write and what you write about. If you listen to a minor key song, it's a sad song, it puts you there.
You're behind 5 Bond themes. We briefly talked about Thunderball earlier, which was obviously a huge hit for Tom Jones. Obviously, that was the first time you worked with John Barry. What's it like hearing your words from those artists' voices for the first time, bringing your words to life?
Well, it's one of the great thrills, because songs stay with people. What I love most about what I do is when someone says to me, oh, that song you wrote, it really, how did you know my life story? And if you can achieve that, then you've cracked it. You've done your job well. I like to write songs that you could relate to and feel that it's about you. Because a great song is about everyone, not just the one person who's going to sing it.
Diamonds Are Forever, which is one of the biggest Bond themes, and you co-wrote with John Barry. That song's also been sampled in a few hip-hop tracks by artists such as Lupe Fiasco, Dead Prez, and of course, Kanye West's Grammy-winning Diamonds from Sierra Leone in 2005. As a songwriter, how do you feel about your work being used in this way? Is it interesting to hear it in a different context, different genre?
That is also a great thrill, because it perpetuates the song.
Different generations
and
as well.
Suddenly now younger people know it. That's happened to me a couple of times in my life with that are worth mentioning. One is I wrote a song once called Reaching Out, which Queen did, called Reaching Out, which Paul Rogers, right, made a lovely record of it. And it was sampled a few years ago by Eminem. He called it beautiful, the song's called, so you can Google it. And many, many years ago, I wrote a song for Priscilla Black for a film called Work is a Four-Letter Word. Work is a Four-Letter Word. And it was recorded by the Smiths. Now, I don't know if you know the Smiths, because I didn't know them, but every kid of that, oh my, the Smiths are legendary. So I've been cool a few times.
You have. You're still cool. Diamonds Are Forever lyrics. I read that there's the rumour that John Barry told Shirley Bassey to be talking about something else when she was singing the song. When you were writing the lyrics, were you aware of this?
No, I didn't think of that, because John Barry was very direct. He was a blunt Yorkshireman, lovely guy. And Shirley said something to him in the street, saying, what do you think? How should I approach this? How do you want me to be with it? What do you think? He said, oh, just think of the diamond as a penis. And she laughed, but then he says she sang it with great conviction. I always thought it was funny.
Diamonds are forever. Hold one up and then caress it. Touch it, stroke it and undress it. I can see every part, nothing hides in the heart to hurt me. I don't need love.
Were you always present when the artists were recording your songs?
No, I have been a lot of the time. It's only a thrill when the artist is wonderful. One of my biggest thrills was working with Barbara Streisand. There's two big ballads in Sunset Boulevard, and she recorded both of them. And I was at the recording session with her in Los Angeles. And just to be in her company and hear that voice, which is beyond words. So that's a goosebump moment.
I can imagine. You obviously mentioned that you get given the melody and then you sit on your own and do the lyrics, but are you ever in the same room as the musical composer?
Well, I like to be in the room when they play it to me first, which is a great moment. And then I like to take that tune, record that tune and get out and just walk around the park, stare out of the window and work on it. I find it very, very difficult. And I think it is difficult. Today's a different world, completely different world, because I have written pop songs and they'd like you to be in the room. Come on, let's write a song.
Mm.
And you shout out, what about this line? What about that? Wouldn't that be great? But the chances of coming up with something that is phenomenal is very unlikely. It's very difficult. How do you come up with a, just say, what do you think of that? Moon River Wider Than a Mile. You wouldn't do that. A lot of thought goes into those songs that are, you know, Over the Rainbow, Bridge Over Troubled Water, all those classic songs. I can't imagine Paul Simon saying, what do you think of this? It's like a Bridge Over Troubled Water. And someone said, yeah, not bad. What else you got? So I prefer to be on my own once I get the melody. I think you get a better song that way.
When you got asked back to write another Bond theme, in 1999, The World Is Not Enough. This was the first Bond theme you'd not written with John Barry. So this was with David Arnold, who also wrote Surrender, which was the alternative theme for Tomorrow Never Dies. Firstly, this was obviously a different era in popular music. What was it like being asked back again? And did it feel different because of you were writing it for a different... You were writing it for Garbage.
No, it didn't feel any different, really. David, I knew David, and we were friends, actually. He doesn't work the same way as John Barry, because John Barry usually gave me the melody, and that was that. David Arnold likes a few lines, so I give him like three or four lines, not all of the song, just a start to get him going.
Mm.
And he said, just throw down any lines, didn't he? Just bits and pieces, which is a different way, but it's good because then he'll pick a line that he loves and off he goes. And then we're off and running. He's a joy to work with. Another thing, I always say this when I'm interviewed, David Arnold, out of all the people I've ever worked with, he is the greatest singer. I've been saying to him for 20 years, make an album just singing, which he's never got around to. Last year, I did The Tiger Who Came to Tea, which is a famous children's book. And I've just done one about Mog, which is a famous book about a cat. When you hear his demo, I defy anyone not to say it's wonderful because of the way he sings them. Anyway, it's a joy to work with him. As far as, you know, Tomorrow Never Dies, it's the same principle as Thunderball. You know, you have to make it provocative and alluring, sexy.
So other films we mentioned earlier, you worked on the soundtrack of The Italian Job with Quincy Jones. What was it like working with Quincy?
No, I loved Quincy. It was wonderful. Again, it was Matt Monro who sang the first song on Days Like These. He's not really a songwriter, Quincy Jones. He's an arranger, producer, the best in the world, possibly.
Mm.
But if you look at his catalogue of what he's done, there aren't many songs there. He's produced everyone you can think of, from Sinatra to Michael Jackson, and going back to people like Billie Holiday and Nina Simone. I mean, everyone phenomenal. But he found it very difficult to write this song, the main song. The brief was to write a summery song because it's summer in Italy. And so I said a song like Volare. It's just one of those Italian lovely things that you hear on holiday. And he found it very difficult because he's a jazz guy. So he could write anything for any jazz singer, Ella Fitzgerald and all those people. He could do anything like that. It took him a while, but when he did it, It was beautiful.
Would you say your approach to songwriting has changed since the beginning of your career?
No. A lesson I've learned, it takes a long time to learn this lesson, is to be yourself. Once you start copying people, I think it doesn't work. It's no good for you. It won't work. No, I think you've got to be yourself. It's the same as a singer, performer. In life, be yourself. You have to be yourself because there's only one of you. There's no one else who's going to be like you. Everyone is their own person, and they shouldn't try to live someone else's kind of life, because what will come out of you, if you're good, it could only come out of you. I hope that makes sense.
It does. Now, tell us about working with Andrew Lloyd Webber. You wrote 6 musicals together. Starlight Express, Tell Me on a Sunday, Aspects of Love, Sunset Boulevard, Whistle Down the Wind, and Stephen Ward. Obviously a winning combination. Can you tell us what it was like working with him on all these projects?
Yes, this first one was Tell Me on a Sunday, which was very successful. And it did me a lot of good because he was so popular. Although I had big success before I met Andrew, he was so famous that when I wrote with him, people said he's got a new, it became news. It became, what's happened to Tim Rice? So it was an important thing, but he's a wonderful person to write with. He is a genius. I don't mean that, that word is overused all the time. He's always got fire in his belly for what he's doing. And it's always a joy, stimulating to work with him.
Which of those musicals do you feel most proud of?
I think Sunset Boulevard, because basically the story is such a brilliant story.
Say I'm through. Well, it's time they knew. With one look, I can break your heart. With one look, I play.
With a musical, it's all about the book and what is the story. It's no good writing good songs for something that isn't basically good. But Sunset Boulevard, in a nutshell, is about a person who was a huge star and now isn't, because it was a long time ago, and she wants to get back.
Mm.
Now, everyone can relate to that, particularly in show business. You know, the world is full of artists that were stars that miss it. And I love that. There's a lot to sing about, those kind of emotions. So, that was a great one.
Let's talk about your accolades, the Oscars, the nominations, Grammy nominations, Tony Awards, Ivor Novello's, an OBE, and the Songwriters Hall of Fame. How do these achievements make you and your family feel?
Well, it makes me proud for my family. It's really, I don't ever think of it as myself. I don't think, oh, aren't I clever? Oh my God, isn't that great? I just can't wait to see my family's faces when I say, you'll never guess, I've only got an Olivia Award. And they go, no. They get so excited. My sisters go mad. Oh, Don's got this. So I do it for my family, really. It's not I do it. When it happens, I'm pleased for them. You know, there's an inner glow, but I don't think of myself like that. I just think I can't wait to tell someone.
Have you ever been influenced by anything going on politically or socially around you when writing lyrics?
No. I don't think being topical in a lyric is, it doesn't make, no, basically you're looking for different ways to say ordinary things. You know, how many times can you say, I love you? You know, you've got to find different ways of coming to that. But I'm not influenced by anything apart from my emotions. I am, I'm very sensitive to words. So when I get an idea, I do know if it's a good idea. And I think, well, has it been done, that kind of idea? And as I know so many songs, I will probably know if it has been done. So I think, oh, well, it hasn't been done. Yeah, let's do that.
Has it ever happened where you have realised it has been done before?
Now, I realise sometimes I've written a song that's almost like that, whatever it was, but I've changed it so it isn't like that. But I'm influenced by what that was. Sometimes you hear a song and you think, that's a great idea, but that second verse should go somewhere else, isn't it?
Is there anything actually in modern day music, that a lyric that stuck out to you recently that you've thought, do you know what, that is a really great concept?
Well, I listen to these songs that, like, George Ezra I like very much, and Bruno Mars. I mean, I listen to these things, oh, that's good, oh, that's clever. But they come and go so quickly these days, songs. You know, songs that are top five hits, the next week they're probably 75, the charts. So, you know, there's no longevity with these songs. I tell you where I do get excited when I listen to country music. Because country music, Nashville, I love those songs. And Carrie Underwood and all those Reba McEntire, they're story songs. And my son Grant writes a lot of those songs. And they are fabulous. I mean, they are really great. And they all sing great and they play guitar. I could listen to country music all day. That's the difference, rather than pop music, because every one of them tells a story, and they are so good. They all sing so great.
Yeah, and it's from the heart, isn't it? It's just...
Everything's from the heart. And you never heard it before.
When you've written a lyric and you've given it to a singer, obviously you've written it in a way that you know what the phrasing, you want the phrasing to be with the melody. So have you ever had a time when you've had to kind of say, actually, this is the way I want this word phrased? Do you get involved with the demos in that way?
Not really, because once it's out of your hands, once you give it, to the world. Someone wants to be called Ben, but they want to call it Ken. Is that all right? Well, we'll do that. No, it's out of your hands. You can't monitor everything.
That's true. Have you ever had to kind of... If someone's actually said, I want to change this lyric, and you've said, actually, no, that's a really important part of the song.
I would always say, let me change it. What do you want changing? And I'll change it for you. So that's what I prefer to do.
What song are you most proud of as a songwriter?
It's impossible to pick one. There are songs I've written that I am proud of, and they don't have to be big hits. The one that I like that comes to mind first is Tell Me on a Sunday, because, again, it's a lovely story.
I'd like to choose how I hear the news. Take me to a park that's covered with trees. Tell me on a Sunday.
And this is the one that a lot of women write to me about, saying, how do you know my life? And basically, it tells a story of a woman, a young girl, who knows she's madly in love, but she knows it's not going to last forever. Now, this is a common thing. People are having an affair, and it's lovely, and it's all great. But deep, deep down, they know it can't last for whatever reason. And that's why it's called When You Tell Me It's Over, Take Me to a Park Covered with Trees. Tell me on a Sunday, please. And I always think that's nice. It's an unusual way of putting it.
Yeah.
And it's an unusual storyline.
It's lovely. And you could just picture it.
Yes.
It gives you that visual, doesn't it?
It does.
Okay, so the final question. What is the song you wish you'd written? And what is it about that song? And this is a really difficult question, and you can have multiple answers.
It's a well-known song for singers and has been for years. It was written by Jerome Kern, and Dorothy Fields did the lyric, and it's The Way You Look Tonight.
Oh, but you're lovely, with your smile so warm and your cheeks so soft. There is nothing for me but to love you, just the way you look tonight.
Why I love it? It's because it's true. Being true in a song is vital. And what that song says is, someday when I'm awfully low, I will feel a glow just thinking of you. Anyone who does feel low, which we all do from time to time, you feel down, you'll look at someone and you'll feel different just by looking at them. I will feel a glow just thinking of you and the way you look tonight. I mean, it just gives me a goosebump thinking of it, because it's such a beautiful melody. And I'll tell you just a quick anecdote about that song. There was a guy from Cincinnati who was a father. His daughter was getting married, and he was made himself ill because he had to write a speech about his daughter. And he tried, you know, he knew it was a big day. His daughter got married, he's getting married. Anyway, he couldn't do it. And then one day he heard this song, and all he did was repeat it. And it really was so tearful to the audience, because that's what he wanted to say to his daughter. So a lyric can really have that kind of power.
To find out more about Don Black, please visit donblack.co.uk. And to hear some of Don's work, please listen to our specially curated playlist. The link is in the episode notes. To find out more about me, please visit my website, which is louisegolby.com. And for updates about the Songwriters Podcast, please follow and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. This series of the Songwriters Podcast is produced by Christopher Mitchell for Unedited. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you've enjoyed this episode.